Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. This is episode number 164, where we are going to be reviewing and rating all 20 drivers from last season, just like we did midway through 2021 season. We're doing it for the complete season now that we've got to the end of everything with the 2021 season. I'm your host, George Howson, and join me today, we have Tom Downey from Everything F1.
Hello.
Tom Horrocks from the Monkey Seat Podcast.
Happy New Year. Hello.
And Owen Medford, who is now a fully graduated engineer.
No, still haven't done the ceremony.
That's been delayed, hasn't it?
Yeah, Transformer Varian has pushed it back a little bit further. But happy New Year, everyone.
Welcome to 2022. We've gone through quite a few of the Grid Talk podcast panelists, got their opinions, their takes. We're doing it on an old-fashioned grade system, not the number system we have now in the UK, but the lettering system. Everybody has rated all the drivers from all the way from F all the way up to A+/A*, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, let's get into the grades. And unsurprisingly, we only have one driver who is in the F category right at the bottom. And it is of course, Nikita Mazepin. And it's not a surprise at all to see him all the way down there, is it, Tom Horrocks? But at the end of the day, I think I gave him an E, which it shows a slight bit of improvement, because at the start of the season, he was absolutely abysmal. And he ended it pretty badly, but ever so slightly better than he started it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally graded him as an E myself as well, but nobody got an F grade. He was, for me, still the worst driver on the grid. And yet, personality aside, he definitely improved as the year went on. He still never reached Mick's overall level, which, you know, overall has to put him behind Mick in a grade. But he did look out of his depth for long periods. And I think we really need to hold off judgment on him as an overall driver until we see him in a better car. But I think, clearly, he needs to have someone more experienced alongside him and needs to be in a better car to prove how good he can be. But he was never anywhere near Mick Schumacher, and you know, Mick was far from flawless, as I'm sure we're going to get to later on. So yeah, absolutely deserved to be the worst driver on the grid, and it's really hard to not be biased and try not to show that bias, as we know what he is as a person. But genuinely, I think he probably was the worst driver on the grid this year.
Yeah, I think he was as well, to be fair. I mean, we've had some very funky grades from him at the end of the day. I think Carl went with a U, he just broke the system with that, but he didn't change his overall grade, which was an F. Like you said, he started completely out of his depth, wasn't ready for Formula One, in the worst car as well, which really does not help. But at the end of the day, you know, you could have put him in a midfield car and he still would have been crashing it quite regularly probably as well. But 2022 is going to be a big year for him, big year for Haas. You know, it's time for the team and himself to, you know, prove himself as a driver. Yeah, we're not going to get into him as a person though, because we definitely get an F grade for that as well, I think. But we'll move on to the D grades now. So there are four drivers in this, and we're going to start off with, surprisingly, Lance Stroll, Owain. Now, personally, I put him as a C. I think he did an okay job for Aston Martin. Aston Martin disappointing this year in the pace of their car. He got beaten no end by Sebastian Vettel, but he's a four-time world champion, multiple race winner, etc., etc. So you kind of expect that. But for me personally, Lance Stroll, I think he did an okay job. He had some pretty solid point-scoring finishes where the car was not the fastest.
Yeah, he didn't. He did a decent enough job. Just looking at his race position finishes, what was the highest he got was something like...
Sixth or seventh.
But for me, I think the difference is though that he just, you know, I gave him an optimistic grade with the C, but you know, obviously it's been pulled back down. I just think he just, bearing in mind he's been part of the team and he's got, you know, you'd think maybe there would be a little bit of better feeling towards him internally at least. But you know, Sebastian Vettel has had less time in that car and done a little bit better with it. I don't know. It just feels like I think he's also been hurt by the order in which they're coming in. But you know that we're going through them. But he just didn't really excite throughout the whole year. It's, you know, he's picked up a few places and probably been hampered by the car a little bit as well. But just in comparison to his teammate, yeah, he's a four-time world champion, but he's still coming in and having to adjust to a new team, new car. Whereas, you know, Lance Stroll has the deck stacked in his favour, and it's just not a particularly great performance over the whole season, I don't think.
No, it's not been great. And I think what probably also hurt Stroll is the fact that a lot of drivers have had incredible seasons this year. So if you have an average season, you you look a bit below average by kind of default because of that. So yeah, it's not been a great season for Stroll. It's not been a great season for his team either. We saw last year that he's able to put out some incredible performances, especially in wet weather, you know, the pole in Turkey. He got a podium in Germany a couple of years ago too. It's just, those performances just too few and far between. He never really got the opportunity this year. But yeah, so we'll move on next to Antonio Giovinazzi. He also got a D grade overall, the Alfa Romeo driver. It's his last season in Formula One, maybe ever, definitely for now. He's been replaced by Bottas and Guanyu Zhou at Alfa Romeo for next year. And Tom Downey, you know, it's not really something you can argue against at the end of the day. He did have some very good qualifying performances. He got into the top 10 when that car shouldn't have been there. But even when he did that, he usually spun out or crashed. He just couldn't hold it together for regular points finishes, which is exactly what Alfa Romeo needed and didn't get.
Yeah, I think I might have given Giovinazzi a C. But I think in hindsight, maybe that's actually a bit generous because he was not brilliant, let's be fair. Like you mentioned, he did have some highs in qualifying, especially when it seemed like his seat was under pressure this year. So I think if we look back to, I believe it was Zandvoort, he got into Q3. It was a bit unlucky at the start and then just went backwards. But he only scored, how many times did he score points in 2021? Was it only twice or something? I know he came 10th in Monaco.
Yeah, it was twice.
Yeah, and then I can't remember where else he scored points.
Saudi Arabia,
okay. Well, that says all you need to know, doesn't it?
Tight street circuits.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And I think the whole sort of like romanticism of, oh, we've got an Italian driver driving for, you know, because obviously he was a proud junior driver and all the rest of it. You know, and you know, obviously Alfa, an Italian brand, albeit a Swiss team, because they're just Sauber with a badge on. It was too little too late. And by the time Guanyu Zhou came around flashing money and we were waiting on the Mario Andretti thing, which obviously never came through, I think it was just a question of who was going to replace him. I don't think we'll see him back in F1. He's 28 already. He's going to be 29 this year. His birthday is the 14th of December, 1993, because I got Wikipedia open on the other screen. But F1 is a sport which is getting younger and younger and younger. You know, look at how old Verstappen was when he made his debut. Look at the top teams now. They've got young drivers. You know, we've got Russell, we've got Norris, we've got Leclerc, we've got Verstappen. Sainz has been around for a while. He's only the same age as me. He's 27. Pending some glitch in the matrix, I don't think we'll see Giovinazzi back. There are too many good drivers coming through, and drivers are getting younger and younger when they're coming into F1. And the days of drivers kind of getting into their 40s, I think, with Kimi now finally retired and Alonso being the only one who's in his 40s. I believe he's in his 40. I believe he's 40 now.
He's 40, yeah.
Yeah, I've got it in my head that he is. And obviously Hamilton is something like 37.
Mm.
We're not going to see Giovinazzi back, I don't think.
No, I agree. I don't think we'll see him back either. I think part of the reason why he stayed on, especially for this year just gone, was the fact that he was Italian in the Alfa Romeo Italian team. I know, like you said, they are technically Swiss, but Italian backers, Italian brand, that definitely helped him out keep his seat ahead of Mick Schumacher for last year. But he's also Formula E for next year. I wish him all the best that you have. Like you said, I think he's a good guy, but at the end of the day, not consistent enough. Even when he did do some great qualifying performances, he didn't see it through. And points win prizes, and Alfa Romeo, they just had a really, really bad season. And on that theme, we go to the other Alfa Romeo driver, Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen's last year in Formula One. I'm sure Tom Horrocks is about to say very much overdue his retirement. But end of the day, it wasn't a good year for him. He beat his teammate, you can say that. There were some times when he did show a bit of pace for the most part. He was kind of showing why he, you know, says that Formula One is a bit of a hobby to him.
Well, I'm glad you've come to me, because now I can really appreciate this will be the last time I talk about Kimi Raikkonen on a podcast with regards to being a driver, because like you say, it's been long overdue for a while. I am not the biggest Kimi Raikkonen fan in the world. It's not going to surprise anyone to hear that. I personally had him as an E. He was one of the only, I think, only three drivers for me not to score. I rated every driver out of 10 for every race, and he was one of only three drivers not to get to 100 over the course of the season. He just seemed to be treading water all season. He's definitely stayed a year too long, maybe even two. You know, his driving into his teammate in a straight line while he was playing with the steering wheel was just frankly embarrassing. And the pace he had was didn't seem to be there. After looking back at all of his races, there wasn't a single, you know, I think it was maybe one good performance, to be fair. I think I'll grade him as a B in one performance. And apart from that, there was nothing else was really anywhere near. He looked moody. He looked dissenting at every turn. He wasn't the fun Kimi anymore. He was your embarrassing uncle that you only wheel out for family occasions. But, you know, both Alfa Romeos were just woeful all year. So, you know, was it the car or was it the drivers? Because, you know, both drivers didn't live up to expectations. That car had no right finishing behind a Williams in the Constructors' Championship. Even without the Spa box office result, they still would have been behind Williams. So ninth place is just an abomination of a season for Alfa Romeo. So it's very difficult to say, was that just Kimi? Was it just that Kimi had given up? Well, if he'd given up, why did he stay for another year? He said at the start of the season that he knew he was going to be retiring at the end of the season. As soon as he got to practice, why did he not just say, well, you know, do you know what? This isn't for me, guys. I'm clearly not going to enjoy myself this year. But he stuck it out. It's another year with a young driver out of Formula One. It's not really gained anything on his legacy. It's not really tainted his legacy because he kind of already did that with his last few seasons. So yeah, it's just a bit of a I am glad he's gone. So for me, Kimi, yeah, he's just it's good to see him go finally. I know he's popular with a lot of people, but I just look back at his performances over the last few years, I don't see a reason for him to justify a position there. Had he not, you know, won a world championship in slightly fortuitous circumstances one time, I can't see he would have stayed had he not done that. But there we go. Goodbye, Kimi. Thanks for the memories, and you shall not be missed from me.
But if you are a Kimi Raikkonen fan and you do want to hear more about him from people who actually like him quite a bit, we did do a special for ahead of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, ahead of his final race, paying tribute to Kimi Raikkonen and his career. Because at the end of the day, most race starts in F1 history, hell of a lot of podiums, hell of a lot of incredible radio messages, you know. So if you want to go back and relive that, I do recommend that you check that out.
Don't worry, listeners, I wasn't on that episode.
No, I made sure that TH was not on that one because it would have gone down very well. So yeah, from the former oldest driver on the grid to the youngest driver who also got a D grade from us overall, it was Yuki Tsunoda Oeyne. And fair to say, he had the odd flashes of, dare I say, not say brilliance, but some very good performances. But again, too few and far between. However, he did end up at the end of the season with a good result. He was very impressive in Abu Dhabi. So there's a lot to look forward to from Yuki Tsunoda, but it was not the best debut season for him this year.
Yeah, two things. One, I've just noticed that I'm just getting on for half the grid are younger than me, which is horrifying, that is. And also,
doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, and then the other thing I was going to say is I kind of get the feeling that Kimi Raikkonen has stayed about two seasons too long in Formula One, but I think maybe Yuki Tsunoda, we'll find out next year, obviously, but he might have come up a couple of seasons too early. You know, he was really, you know, obviously he was really great at the start of the season. I was about to swear there, I won't. But he was really great at the start of the season, you know, in Bahrain. But he'd had a lot of practice there, obviously, with the way the testing worked and them staying out there and starting the season there. But, you know, it was almost immediately downhill, you know, into the bottom of the midfield, you know, messing around with the Haases as his teammate just blew him away, basically. And yeah, one's more experienced, but that's still sort of you know, a good barometer for it, and he just kept making mistakes and kept putting in the wall, and not just through the races where their points are divvied out, but you know, through practice sessions and stuff. And I know that's what they're there for, but throwing it in the wall in qualifying and stuff, you know, is automatically guaranteeing you know it almost pegs you back before you've even had a chance to show your hand. And it's, you know, there's just so many issues for Yuki that he's never really, you know, apart from a couple of freak results, you know, fourth in Abu Dhabi or sixth in Qatar. Like, you know, fourth in Abu Dhabi, sixth in Hungary. Sorry. Well, that's my camera gone. I'll try and sort that out in a minute. But yeah, it just seemed like a really poor season. He's come back up a little bit, but he's still got a lot, like, you know, he's got a mountain to climb next year. And I just kind of hope that, you know, he can sort himself out when everything is new with the 2022 cars and actually sort of and make it a bit further up and actually compete properly, because he's right now it looks like a bit of an abysmal performance from someone who had a lot of promise
Well, yeah, I mean, after the first few races, he literally first two, we were all singing his praises, even though, you know, he spun off in Imola, he was showing a lot of pace. You know, with Tsunoda, like you said, he probably did come in a bit too early. But Honda, maybe knowing that it was going to be there last year, wanted the Japanese driver in one of their cars, at least for the final year. Maybe that played a part in it all. But at the end of the day, he has a year's experience under his belt. This year now is very much a clean slate in terms of the designs of the cars. They're going to be fresh to absolutely everybody. You know, the cars for the last 4 years or so, four seasons or so, remain relatively the same with the philosophies and everything. So everybody else had all that experience and he didn't. And I think that really hurt him. I think that really hurt all three rookies this year, to be fair, to an extent. But Tsunoda definitely as well. But next year, we're hoping he's going to do very well. I really want to see him do well, because this year, Pierre Gasly, and that's a guy we'll get into quite a bit later in the show, he absolutely carried the AlphaTauri team this season. You know, Tsunoda was not scoring points anywhere near regularly enough. And I think a D grade is very fair for him. I think that's what I gave him as well. But yeah, before we get into the C grades, let me just say that if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, we will give you a shout out at the start of the show, as always, as we've done for quite some time now. And yeah, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well, where you can join that action live, normally live. We're not going out live on this one, at least, just because it's not reacting to a live event. But when the season gets underway again, we will be doing our shows live on YouTube. So we'll get into the C grades. And the first one I want to go through is Daniel Ricciardo, a man who actually managed to win a race this year. And surprisingly, he's down in C. But that the thing is, at the end of the day, Tom Downey, I think that's mainly because, again, he's just been too inconsistent at times. Yes, he had that great performance in Italy. But aside from that, for the most part, he has flattered to deceive him what was a pretty good McLaren car this year.
Yeah. Danny Rick, oh, I'm surprised he got a C overall. I gave him a D. Oof. And I was being generous. Because
I think you were the one guy to give him. No, there was two.
No. I've looked.
He's looked at the data sheet.
Yeah.
You and Phil are the only guys. Everybody else gave a C grade.
Thank you, Phil. He has not had a good year. I know he won a race and he did have some good weekends, which we talked about. But if you want to say that Gasly carried AlphaTauri, you could argue Lando somewhat carried McLaren this year. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. If Danny Rick would have been more consistent this year and had more points finishes, McLaren would have had a good chance of finishing third, or would have probably finished third in the Constructors. Yes, I know he won a race, and McLaren were the only team to get a 1-2, but that is also because Hamilton and Verstappen had a little boo-boo in that race, which I'm sure we'll get to in a bit. He did have good weekends, obviously, because he had to be in a position where he was, where, you know, if we take Monza, for example, he had to be in a position where something happened, he was there to take the lead. And he was still on course for a decent result regardless. But how many times this season did we see him out-qualified, out in Q2, out in the points, getting stuck in the DRS train, not being able to overtake? And bearing in mind, Danny Rick, we saw it when he joined Renault in 2019, I think it was. He took a while to bed into the team, and then in 2020, he was better. But that McLaren is a step up from what that Renault was. And Danny Rick has been around for a while. You know, he's entering his 10th year on the grid in his 9th full year, or I might even be a year out on that. I can't remember if he joined midway through 20. Did he join midway through 2011? I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. He drove for HRT for the second half of the 2011 season.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was 2011 or 2010, but no, I'm fairly certain it was 2011. You know, so he's been around. He's won races. He's had pole positions. And he's also one of only two drivers, I believe, to win a race for two different teams in the turbo hybrid era, because obviously Perez has been the other one. I can't think of anyone else who has actually won a race for two different teams.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's correct.
You're right, yeah. You're absolutely right.
Spitting bare facts here. But you know, he's just in a car and a team that is so good. And you know, McLaren are really on a resurgence. He should have done better in the machinery he had. Again, yes, I know driving styles have to adapt. And, you know, I think maybe we saw that a bit in 2018 when he was at Red Bull. You know, when the car was beginning to be tailored more towards Max, because as we've seen from the 2021 season, Max is the future, or is that team. It shouldn't take him that long to get adjusted to a car. Not saying I could do a better job, obviously. I wouldn't even fit in an F1. But if he doesn't improve in this upcoming season, his days are numbered, because there are plenty of other drivers who could take that seat. And he needs to do better. And his 2021 season, I think if he wouldn't have won that race in Monza, it would be looking pretty bleak for him.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I think on the mid-season ratings, and someone, again, may correct me with this one, but I think we did give him a D grade overall, because that was before the win in Monza. So, yeah, that's the main reason why I gave him a C over a D. I think if it wasn't for that, I probably would have given him a D grade as well. It's a tricky one with Ricciardo, because we all know how talented he is. We all know how good he is. He just needs to show it in that car. And I think next year he will do. But that's not really based on much from this year, other than that one race. But we'll see what happens with him. We'll see what happens with him there. So we'll go from Ricciardo to Mick Schumacher, who also got a C grade, his debut season in Formula One. And again, you know, it's hard for him. He didn't score any points. Neither past driver did this year. It was the worst car on the grid by some margin, Tom Horrocks. But he did show that he has some decent pace in that car. He did get into Q2 twice, albeit one of them because of a crash. But I think in Turkey, he got there on merit, which is really saying something. The kid has some supreme speed, but again, he just needs to show a bit more consistency, probably.
Yeah, I mean, as far as debut seasons go, it was actually a fairly strong debut season when you take into account the car he was in and the teammate he had and everything. It was fairly solid. But I mean, for me, I know he's in the CPAC here, but for the reason for me he got a D overall was because you can't really judge him based on his poor teammate. And the car was terrible, but he did make a lot of mistakes. As I said, decent rookie campaign, but his inexperience did show. And there was too many times when he binned it in practice or he binned it in qualifying. And, you know, you can beat your teammate in qualifying by 2 seconds, but if you're behind him on lap one because you've had a little spin and got going again, then you finish 1 second ahead of him. You know, that's kind of, you know, that shows just how bad your teammate is, but you're the one that's actually looked worse because you're the one that's had the huge pace advantage and still ended up having to pass your teammate on track. He did that far too often for me, which is why for me he got a D grade overall. There's this whole romantic thing about the name Schumacher back on the grid, which I absolutely buy into. It is good to see him there. I was unconvinced about whether he was good enough, but this season's proved to me that he definitely deserves a shot in Formula One. He deserves a shot in Formula One in a better car than he's got at the moment, which I'm sure Haas will bring a better car next year. Whether it's latched onto the back of the field or just closer to the back of the field, I'm not convinced either way. But it'd be nice to see him in a few more wheel-to-wheel battles next year and not just squabbling with his teammate and just kind of fighting around at the back and getting in the way. And so, but it'd be great if you got a more experienced teammate. As long as he's in that Haas car, he's going to be alongside Nikita Mazepin, so he's going to have to kind of deal with the cards he's dealt and try and get his experience and role models from elsewhere, because he's certainly not going to get any from his teammate. So he needs to build on what he's done this year. He does need to improve, because another season like that in a better car, and, you know, throwing results away, you know, losing your front wing on your own behind the safety car or just binning it into the barrier. You know, it's if he's doing that frequently next year, then I think, you know, Ferrari might have second thoughts about this great plan that they've got. You know, they signed Carlos Sainz for a 2-year deal in the hope that Mick Schumacher would come good in 2 years as an intern or something at Haas, and then come in and replace Carlos Sainz and have the dream team of Leclerc and Schumacher. But if he does have another bad season, they're going to be signing on science long term and going to be cutting their losses with Mick. So he does need to improve definitely next year, but decent start, and I would like to see more of him. Definitely deserves a shot.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is as well with Schumacher is that, like Ricciardo, and I think it's probably a greater extent than Ricciardo, he does take some time getting used to new series. His first season in F2, he was okay. He was average. I think he got a few podiums, but then the next year he won it. So again, he's got a season under his belt. I think next year he'll have a much better year, but he also needs a better car, which I think Haas should provide him with. I'm just hoping they're at least competitive, that's the word, because they were not competitive this year at all. If Schumacher had the race of his life, he'd maybe beat the Williams, maybe, but even that was a stretch most of the time. It just didn't happen. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Mick Schumacher next year. I think, and moving on now to a driver, again, probably divides opinions quite a bit. There's quite a spread with the grades this year. Another race winner that's in the C category, Esteban Ocon. Owen. And I think you gave him a B grade. I think you gave him one of the highest grades overall. So I'm interested to hear what you think of him, because for me, he seems like the kind of driver that would do very well just leading out front and dominating a race like he did Hungary, and like he almost got a podium in Saudi Arabia with as well. But at the same time, he also had quite a few races where he was caught in the midfield pack, and sometimes he finished out at the points, which when you compare him to his teammate Alonso, it's a little bit disappointing in the Alpine.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know what I was. I don't really know what I was thinking when I gave him a B, because that's a the thing for me is you look at it.
Expert opinions here on the Grid Talk podcast.
Hey, they're transient. They can be expert and transient. I think he's definitely, you know, he's more of a C, really. I gave him a B, but he's more of a C, and it's because of the win that he gets that, to be honest. In the grand scheme of things, he's finished behind his teammate in the championship, who took a year out. Who took some years out to go and do endurance racing, which and a couple of other forms of motorsport, which there are, you know, was forced to do for one, but you know, he's come back and he spent time. He's more familiar with these cars, you'd say, particularly with the Alpine setup and, you know, and Team Enstone basically, and you'd think he'd have his head sorted a bit more. But that, look at the early half of the season, and you know, from Azerbaijan to Austria, awful turn of form. You know, immediately after he got the contract extension for 3 years, you know, if I were the lawyers who've been working that out up at head office, I'd be like, what have we signed here for 3 years? Like, he's immediately down to 14th place twice on the trot, and you know, like, a couple of the retirements that he's got weren't really his fault. You know, the mechanical issues with the car and things like that. But when you finish behind someone who is many years your elder, has taken time out to do a less demanding motorsport, you're more familiar with the cars, you're more familiar with the team setup, you're more familiar with, you know, how it operates and things like that. And, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, Fernando Alonso being a two-time world champion, obviously. But I just feel like Ocon he's not excited in the way that he did sort of previously. And you can kind of see why Mercedes were looking for other people rather than him when they wanted... You know, when they needed to put people in the car, and he just doesn't look like he's got the potential to be sort of the George Russells of the world, which is a shame, because it feels like that his sort of tenure in Formula One is passing him by. He's sort of getting into the twilight of his career for how long he's been, and yet he's done an incredible job to get there. But I just don't think it's a particularly good performance to finish in the bottom half of the championship. Given the car that he's got, which it, you know, should be able to do decent things and poach a podium every now and then.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I mean, he did only just miss out on the last lap in Saudi Arabia, but I know what you mean. You compare him to Alonso, who has had time out. Yes, it's Alonso. You can put him in anything and he'll win. You know, that's just the way he is. But even with that win that Ocon got, he's still finished behind Alonso. So it's a tough one to read at the end of the day. I think only 7 points separated them. I think Alpine did probably the most they could do with that car. I don't think that car was particularly great this year. I don't think it was at all. So for them to get fifth like they did ahead of AlphaTauri, I think that's a hell of an achievement. But Ocon's a very difficult one to read. It's going to be an interesting year for him next year, because, you know, he's going to be expected to take over the team leader role with that very long contract he's got. I mean, Alonso, you can't have that many more years left if he's 40 years old. No offense to the guy. He deserves to be there, absolutely. But, you know, time waits for nobody. So we'll see how Alonso gets on in the next few years or so. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen to Ocon in that team. But yeah, so we'll move on from that, and we'll get into another C grade. I'm personally surprised to see him as a C, to be honest. I gave him a B grade personally, but Sebastian Vettel and Tom Downey, I think he's probably had more press this year for his off-track, I don't want to say antics, because a lot of it had very serious messages behind it, of course, his extracurricular activities, if you can call it that, when it comes to the environment and LGBT rights, of course. But in the car of Aston Martin, it's been a slightly disappointing year for him, only just mainly because of the car, to be honest, and also because of that disqualification in Hungary too. I'm still thinking about that one, as I'm sure he is. So how do you see his season in 2021?
Vettel had a very, very up and down 2021 season. He has some real highs. You know, he got Aston Martin's first podium in F1 as a constructor. I can't remember if it's their first ever or the first since 1950 or whenever it was. in Azerbaijan, and he capitalized on the situation and drove really well to hold off whoever was hunting him down in Hungary, only to be disqualified on a technicality. But rules are rules, aren't they? You know, I don't necessarily agree with it, but there is a reason they need to take the amount of fuel. It's also 6 months ago. But he also had some pretty poor performances this year. For as many highs there were just as many lows and then nondescript races this year. I mean, you know, not getting out of Q1 in Saudi Arabia, you know, just some poor performances in various races and non-points finishes galore. Like you said, the car didn't help because Aston Martin didn't adapt to the change in slight change in regulation for 2021. And I do wonder, hope, pray that they've thrown more resources at 2022, which I think they said they were doing after a while. But Vettel this year, when I say this, I mean 2021, obviously. Like you alluded to, I think he's been recognised almost more for his off-track antics. And I say antics, I mean that in a positive sense. You know, I'm not going to go through them because I don't want to turn it into that kind of discussion. But I don't know if we'll see him win a race or anything again. I think unless Aston pull out like a brawn in 2022, I don't think we're going to see that. Vettel, he's changed a lot of people's opinions over the last few years because not that many people used to like him. I didn't used to like him, but I have actually grown to quite like him. I think he's just sort of like winding down his career. And if you think back to a decade ago when he had just won his second title on the bounce, that was going to be four with Red Bull. You know, it's funny how wins change and how things change. And he'll see it this year. I think he only had a 2-year contract with Aston anyway. So if he has, you know, a particularly torrid time in 2022, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him off.
I don't know. I mean, I think he loves Formula One at the end of the day, but it also depends on, there's two parties in that at the end of the day. If Aston Martin don't want to keep him, they won't. But I also think he's going to keep beating Lance Stroll at least. And I think that's the minimum. It's not hard. You're right. It's not particularly hard, but at the end of the day, if he's beating his teammate, then, you know, that's all you can really ask of him. That's the minimum you can do to keep your contract, I think, in my opinion. There's more factors, of course, than that. That's not the be all and end all, but you know, I think we'll see him in F1 for a good few years. Yeah, I think he's going to be better next year. I think he's going to be better, as will the car as well. I also think so. We'll see. It's all speculation. And they've not even seen any car reveals yet. We'll do. We'll cover them, of course, just like we did last year. But got at least a month or so to go before that. So next up, we have also in the C category, we have Valtteri Bottas. Now, Tom Downey's called Valtteri Bottas shit, but what does Tom Horrocks think of his 2021 season?
The reason Mercedes won the Constructors' Championship. Still not good enough, but, you know, for me, over the course of the season, over 22 races I think we had, for me, he over those grade out of 10 races, he got one more point than Sergio Perez over the course of 22 races in my grading system, not on the championship table. But again, he finished third in the championship as well. So for me, he's done a better job out of the two number two drivers. I did have him as a C as well. He was a C minus. He was like the bottom end of the C category, but because just still, despite that, still wasn't good enough. I don't think he's as bad as people are making out, because although he was nowhere near his races, nowhere near his teammate in races, he was closer than Perez was on flat-out pace, on qualifying pace and on race pace. He did outdo Perez in that sense, and that's kind of all he needed to do. He had some bad luck with reliability, a lot of bad luck, and he would have been a comfortable third place if that was the case. And this was in a car that over the course of the season was the second best. You look at the races where Red Bull were quicker. There was ones where they were very even. You couldn't really put anything between them. And then there were races where Red Bull were just dominant. And there were other races where Mercedes were dominant. But again, over the course of the season, I think the Red Bull just shaded it over Mercedes. And yet he still managed to come ahead of Perez. So he can't be terrible if he's done that. He did make a few errors and he did go missing in races too often. But overall, if you take away his unreliability, he's done a solid job. And he's justified Mercedes' decision to re-sign him. Just, I think, probably with Russell in that team, it's an unstabilizing element. And there's some issues in there as well. I just think that potentially Bottas, you know, when he got his... when he got his contract with Alfa Romeo, he did seem to up his pace a little bit. He won a race and he showed strength. You know, when he was looking quick, say in Russia, he looked like he was nailed on pole position in that race. We'll never know if he was going to beat Norris, but end up putting right to the back. You know, knowing going into that he was going to be put right to the back. I just feel for him. I think he's had a bad run of it this year, but you know, that is down to his overall pace just not being there. He was never a match for Lewis Hamilton. They gave him a chance in the first couple of races of the season. He did absolutely nothing to help Lewis Hamilton's championship season. You look at, I think, was it Spain, where he just didn't get out of his way, and there was another race, I can't remember which one it was now, but there was another race when he was very slow to let Lewis by, when Lewis was coming through on a different strategy. So it's overall, you know, Perez was the number two from the start of the season this year, whereas Bottas was not. So that's kind of played into that as well. So, yeah, I think C grade is just about right for him, to be honest. I think he's done just enough to keep, you know, justify his position in that team for this season. But, yeah, the right decision to move on.
Yeah, the thing with Bottas as well is it's been another season where he's only won one race compared to Hamilton's, what, 9 race wins or something like that. It's chalk and cheese. It's a ridiculous difference between the two of them. And the reason why, personally, I graded Perez as a bit higher, really, and we've graded him overall probably higher, is the fact that it's his first season in that Red Bull. And, you know, this was Bottas's fifth and final season, isn't it, Mercedes? So there's a big difference there. You know, it might not make too much sense, but in my head, at least, you know, Perez really helped Max Verstappen, not just in the final race, but throughout the season, really helped Max Verstappen win the Drivers' Championship. Bottas, he did obviously help Mercedes win the Constructors' Championship, but I don't think he really helped Hamilton win the Drivers'. Like, where was he in Abu Dhabi? In Russia, he just let Verstappen past. In Spain, like you said, Tom, he blocked Hamilton. He wouldn't let him past at all for ages. He had to probably fight. I mean, yeah, Hamilton eventually won the race, but it did not help at all. And if he didn't win the race, I think there would have been some severe discussions, some severe table smashing and headphone throwing in the Mercedes debrief after that. But yeah, so not the greatest season by any means for Bottas. Not disastrous. Mercedes still Constructors Championship winners this year. They've won 5 in a row because in part of Bottas, you know, at a time there. So it's 5 out of 5 for Bottas in Constructors Championship terms, while he's been at Mercedes. But that's the most positive view you can take of it, really. And it makes sense why Russell is in the car for next year alongside Hamilton at Mercedes. So we'll go to our final C grade. This is in no particular order, by the way, other than the gradings. We don't think that Bottas was better than Vettel, for example, or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's just a C grade. So the last C grade overall that we've got, just scraping in there, really. I think there's quite a few D's in there as well. But Nicholas Latifi from Williams. And Owain, you know, he got his first points for Williams this year. He helped Williams to 8th overall in the Constructors as well. And to be honest with you, I think he's had a fairly solid year. I mean, when your teammate's George Russell, it's very, very hard to match that. At the end of the day, he did have some good performances this year.
I disagree.
Well, what did you give him overall?
I gave him a D.
You gave him a D. Okay.
I gave him a D because he's got under half the points of his teammate, who is George Russell, and is incredibly quick. And you can tell that Latifi just isn't on the same level, which is, you know, sort of unfortunate for him. But he's, you know, if not for Hungary, his highest points finish would have come in Belgium. You know, and I just sit there and I go, he just doesn't set the world alight. He's fine. Like, he's absolutely fine, but he's one of those drivers that you think would, like, you know, in 20 or 30 years, you won't remember Nicholas Latifi, the greatest one in the world. I've got nothing against him personally, but you just won't remember him. He doesn't set the world alight. I don't think he's going to move up, you know, into a better team. I don't think that's on the cards for him. I think Williams is sort of the place where he's going to see his career. I think his best chance of better results is a better Williams car for next year. You know, luckily he doesn't put himself in too much trouble, and he hasn't this year, as far as I know, as far as I can remember, really. But, you know, apart from that, he's also not sort of done anything particularly exciting either. And maybe that's his issue. Maybe he doesn't put his nose into, or you know, maybe. But by being that very clean driver, he doesn't really get himself into trouble and picking up the odd points result here and there. He's stopping himself from being able to achieve so many better positions. You know, I just, he doesn't do anything for me, really. And I'm surprised that he's got a sort of rating as high as he has, to be honest.
There's two sides of this for me. It's his second year of Formula One. I feel like he's improved over last year. I don't think he was particularly bad in 2020. I don't think he was particularly good either. I feel like he's improved a bit this year, just gone. So that's why I personally gave him a C, and why probably quite a few other people did as well. It's an easy comparison to make because they're both Canadian, but I think Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi, apart from very rare occasions, they don't really do anything particularly special, but at the same time, they usually bring the car home, and at least they do that, you know. And again, both probably in their seats because of their rich dads at the end of the day. But I don't think he's had a particularly bad year at all. And most of us have gone with that as well. But if you've got some hot takes about these drivers, just let us know. Tweet us at F1 Chronicle, or say in the or leave a comment in the YouTube video as well, and just let us know what you think about our grades and stuff, whether you agree or disagree. We're always up for a discussion. So yeah, now we're going to move on to the B's, the guys that have done above average. Let's just say that's the easiest way to say it. And we've got four of these in total, and we've mentioned them a few times already, but the next one is Sergio Checo Perez in his first year at Red Bull. Tom Downey, I think he took, again, like a lot of drivers who changed teams, he took a bit of time getting used to the Red Bull car, but in the end, he played a pivotal role in getting Red Bull their first drivers' championship in 8 years. And it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on next year. And of course, as well, he has his first win for Red Bull under his belt as well after Baku.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain I gave Perez a B for this year. And I know he doesn't, you know, Tom, you made reference to Bottas, and obviously we talked about him earlier. You said Perez came in as a number two driver. That was clear from the onset. And from what we've sort of heard from interviews and all the rest of it, Perez knew that, and Perez was fine with that. And I think that's really played into Red Bull's hands this year. He was obviously lucky to win, I'd say, in Baku because of Hamilton obviously accidentally knocking the brake magic switch and going off in turn one. Otherwise, Hamilton would have had it bang to rights into turn one, and Perez would have been second. But alas, he won. And he was still up there when he needed to be. He did have some good qualifying performances. I would say overall, though, qualifying was an area which he does need to improve on. But equally, we've never looked at Checo as being a sort of out-and-out qualifying king. Checo is the kind of guy who you know you can leave on an alternate strategy, who will go out, who will eke so many laps out of tyres. You know, how many times did we see Red Bull do that where they knew they could leave him out, sacrifice his race, which he was fine to do because he knew that was what he was there to do, to allow Max to undercut Mercedes, come back, overtake, all the rest of it. He did what Red Bull needed him to do. Arguably, he wasn't there all the time, and he could have done better in some races. In some races, it was, you know, he wasn't there enough, but he was still, or you know, it was his first season in a very different setup, in a different environment, in a different type of car. Now, it's not just that he's gone to a different team. He's gone to a top team. He's gone to a team that was actively competing for the championship. He's gone to a car that's got a very different philosophy, because people may or may not say it, but that Red Bull is designed around Verstappen, and why wouldn't it be? And the car does inherently have an unstable rear end because that's how Max likes to drive it. And it did take Perez a while to adapt to it. And we saw that with some of his qualifying pace. But when needed, my God, did he have some titanic battles with Hamilton this year, which allowed him to Max to catch up when he was undercutting him or something. You know, look at Abu Dhabi, look at where did he have a really good battle with him? Turkey. And other places. You know, Max said it himself when in Abu Dhabi, you know, we heard him over the radio, our Checo's a legend. And when Perez went long in Paul Ricard, held up Hamilton, and then Max was able, and then, you know, did what he needed to do there. So in that sense, he had a brilliant season. And dare I say it, it seems like the curse of that second Red Bull seat has somewhat been broken. There were times this year when I was watching it and I was just like, I don't know. But then other times it was, he did what he needed to do, and he did overall have a good season, I thought.
Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, he's yeah, he had some races and some performances, particularly in qualifying, where you thought, God, what's happened here? How has this happened? But on the whole, he did make a big difference. He did have some great battles with Lewis Hamilton as well, which really helped out Verstappen in the championship fight. And the thing is that, like you said as well, he had a car that was had an unstable rear end, which is probably the exact opposite of how he likes to have a car, because he likes to, you know, preserve his tires and stuff for as long as possible. So yeah, a solid year for Perez and his Red Bull, and hopefully next year you'll push on from even there and get maybe close the gaps I want to Max Verstappen, but we'll see how that goes. So next up, we have the guy that is going to be in a top team. Finally, he's going to be in that Mercedes for next year. It's George Russell. He got a big grade from us overall. He got his first podium this year, even though obviously he didn't actually race for it, but he did have an incredible qualifying performance to get it. And he was a key part in getting Williams their 8th place overall in the Constructors' Championship. So how did you rate George Russell this year just gone, Tom Horrocks?
It's a definite step up, and he's proven that he has the potential to be an elite level driver. I do think that he hasn't shown the consistency this year that a lot of people were expecting. The consistency came at the start of the season where Williams were still just nowhere, and it looked like, you know, another season of the occasional 11th place and an agonising, you know, Latifi scraping a point in a crazy race was going to see him finishing behind his teammate again. You know, it looked like something like that was going to happen, but then we saw what happened in Hungary and then Spa, and then that just set the tone for the season. But once that place was confirmed, that 8th place over Alfa Romeo was confirmed with that 2nd place in Spa, it kind of tailed off, and I think that's a bit of a disappointment for me. He did make a few mistakes this year, some epic performances, some epic qualifying, which we know he can do. I don't know if that car is just set up to qualify well. Obviously not, because Latifi can't qualify in it, but I don't know if George Russell sets it up to qualify well and then hang on in the race, which is why he tends to fall back. I know that's how Bottas sets his cars up, so potentially there may be a little bit in with there. And, you know, the huge stroke of luck in Spa, but even if you take that out, he still had a decent season. But for me, you know, he showed some inexperience in Imola when he, you know, the way he challenged Bottas at a point when, you know, he didn't need to make that challenge, and he certainly didn't need to react the way that he did. I know he'd just been involved in a big high-speed collision, but, you know, he had to accept his role in that accident, and perhaps he can learn from that, especially given, you know, who he was attacking and what team it was in, and you know, just at that stage in the race, Bottas was a little bit slower. Yes, you know, it's racing, you've got to go for it, but it's just the aggression of the overtake and then the eventual mistake that led to the collision just for me showed a little bit of inexperience. And just the end of the season was a bit of a red flag for me. You know, if he'd have carried on, you know, grabbing the odd points position here and there, the odd great qualifying performance, perhaps people would be saying, you know, how much he's going to be challenging Hamilton next year. But all I'm seeing in social media post-season, you know, take from that what you will, but all I'm seeing post-season is people saying that they've made a mistake signing Russell over Norris. I'm not sure Norris was ever really in the picture to be signed for Mercedes, but I know he's got representation in some ways by Toto Wolff, but that doesn't by any stretch of the imagination put him as a Mercedes driver. But it's just, for me, at the end of the season just tailed off. It's like he was phoning it in. It's like he'd got his contract, so that's job done. He didn't want to put himself at risk in a car, you know, and he didn't want to go the way of old Bobby Kay, where he, you know, signed for a big team and then gets an injury in a car that he shouldn't have been driving and ends up missing out on that big move. And I just kind of, it was just a bit worrying. And I just hope the next season he does come out all guns blazing and does, you know, prove to everyone that he is that top level driver, because he's certainly got the potential. And I think, you know, I was actually surprised at the end of the season when I finished my gradings and I leveled it all out, and you know, he was actually right up there as in the B category, and, you know, very close to the A category, which I was a little surprised at, given I think just his peaks were so good that that's kind of artificially inflated his performances. I mean, that lap in Spa where he got second place was probably the lap of the season. It was an amazing qualifying performance, and, you know, in that car, in those conditions, on that track, that alone was enough to show Mercedes that he is the guy you want in that car. So hopefully just a bit of consistency and a bit more maturity added to the package, and then he's going to be a world championship winning driver in the future, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like you said, that lap in Spa was just something else. Awful conditions. And we actually did a live commentary of that qualifying session, our first ever live commentary session. So if you want to get all of our reactions to it as it happened, because we were all just gobsmacked, like, what are we witnessing here? When is the Williams going to slide down the order? But he just never did. It was incredible performance by him. As was Sakirin. I mean, we said it a lot, but Sakirin 2020, that was... Yeah, his only performance in that Mercedes car, and he absolutely smoked Bottas. So, you know, on that alone, you think he's going to at least be challenging Hamilton at some races. He's going to be there. But, yeah, it was a good year for him overall. Did let off the gas a little bit as the season curtailed out. But Williams was already safe-ish pretty much in the constructors. Maybe that played a part, and it definitely would have played a part in the development if they hadn't already stopped it. So it's kind of hard to read. But at the end of the day, on his day, he's magic, George Russell. I can't wait to see him in a top car next year. It's going to be brilliant. So let's move on to the next driver. Let's go with Fernando Alonso, back after 2 years out of the sport, back in Alpine. Owain, how did L plan go? Did it go to plan, or in the end, would you maybe expect a little bit more from him in his comeback year?
Just a flip side of, I guess it's a flip side of Ocon, so I'm glad I've got both of them, but Fernando Alonso, bearing in mind, you know, he's had a couple of years out, he's done actually a surprisingly good job. And I don't think there was any session where, like, any time where you felt he's sort of being a bit lazy here. I think, you know, he came back in with the best of intentions. And, you know, maybe that's to try and, you know, hope Alpine can improve the car and can get a championship. But this season, he's, you know, with a little bit of help from the own driver test, you know, he's coming in and got a third place, but that was a bit of a fluke in Qatar. But the fact that he's, you know, still gone and got, you know, some really decent results, you know, a fourth place, a few sixth places. You know, he's done a really, really bang up job of consistently being further up the midfield than you'd maybe expect the car to be. And I think that's difficult to do, you know, with a couple of years out in a completely different formula that drives completely differently. You know, endurance racing is completely different. It's a completely different challenge. It's not as relentless a schedule in some ways as the Formula One World Championship. And for him to come back in and do what he's done, beat the established teammate, as I said, is, I think, you know, testament enough to why he's pushing, you know, why he's in the B grades. And I think he could probably push an A had he had a couple of, just a slightly better result here or there, you know, a couple of podiums. And you're really starting to look at Ocon and go, well, what are we paying you for? Like, why have we just signed you? You know, as I said earlier, you've got a guy who's come in, you know, he's pushing, what was it, 40 years old. He's, you know, he's not that far behind Raikkonen, who's had a borderline diabolical season at this point. You know, and he's getting podiums and smashing it, admittedly in a better car. But, you know, it says such a lot about who Fernando Alonso is and what he can do. And I guess that's the difference. That's that extra world championship for you. That's what makes a difference. And that's why I've put him where he is. You know, I think he's done a bang up job.
Yeah, I agree. He's had a very good season to come back. Like, he'll be 2 years out. And to slot back in that Alpine team, beat his teammate who has been there for a few years already himself, get the podium in Qatar, which is very richly deserved, to defend like a lion, like he did against Hamilton in Hungary as well. You know, that's the old Nando. That's the Alonso that we know and love, and we love to see back in the sport. I'm looking forward to seeing next year as well. You know, it's just great. And the thing is, you can never accuse, you know, wherever the Alpine car is doing, that is the maximum it can do in Alonso's hands. You know, he's always giving it 110%, always. A bit like the next guy on this list as well, which I'm personally surprised to see down in the B categories. I put him as an A, and I think he was A midway through the season as well. But it's Charles Leclerc, Tom Downey. And how do you rate his season? Because obviously he didn't get a win. He very nearly won in Silverstone. He's had a couple of pole positions. He's been unlucky at times. But at the same time, he also got beaten by Carlos Sainz over the course of the season. So he's a difficult one to rate in a way.
Then we'll just chat what I gave him. I did give him it. Just make sure. I did indeed give him an A. Sorry, no, that's Carlos Sainz. Who am I looking for? Leclerc.
You gave him a B.
I did give him a B. Yeah. Oh, God.
Most people gave him a B, to be fair. I was one of the few that gave him a B.
He had a decent season. Don't get me wrong. And the Ferrari of 2021 was an awful lot better than the Ferrari of 2020. As we know, they had their iffy engine from 2019, which then caused quite a lot of hangover. However, if you look at, yes, he had two pole positions, but Monaco, he crashed out heavily in qualifying. And let's be fair, Max was going to take pole that race because the lap he was on, okay, you know, we can't say for definite, but odds are Max was going to take pole that race and Leclerc would have been P2, maybe P3. Still a good qualifying, obviously, very, very good qualifying, especially in his home race. Yes, you could say he was in contention for the win in Silverstone, but once Hamilton pitted and then served his penalty and all the rest of it, he was always going to catch up because that Mercedes was a far superior car to the Ferrari. So he's never realistically going to win. Turkey, yes, he was out in front for a while, but strategy didn't help. And I think we were all expecting him to walk over Carlos Sainz this year, or at least somewhat. Okay, maybe not walk over.
About walk over. Sainz has been a very good driver for a long time.
Yeah. Okay, not walk over. That's not the right phrase. But I think we were expecting
him to be overall. Yeah.
Yeah, and for it to sort of be like not significant, but enough, like a sort of sizable gap between the two of them. However, Sainz, for me, was the better Ferrari driver this year. I know Leclerc had two pole positions, but in terms of consistency and over the whole year, I think Sainz was the better driver, hence why I gave him the grade I gave him. Yeah, I mean, Charlie boy, you know, he had some good races when he was in the points. He did help Ferrari get third, but for someone who has been so hyped up and had such a good junior career, you know, winning, I think it was GP3 at the time and then GP2 or F2, I can't remember when they rebranded, but he won back-to-back junior championships and then came into F1 in 2018, and then obviously joined Ferrari in 2019 where he had two race wins. He's going to be in F1 for a long time, we know that, because he is, you can't not put him in like the upper echelon to the drivers, but I just feel like 2021, I think it's going to be, I think he's going to use it as a year where he's going to learn and grow and probably sort of like mature and develop a bit. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on next year.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how he gets on next year. I think the fact that he's been beaten by his teammate, I think for the first time in his short F1 career, I think that will fire him up. I think, yeah, I think Sainz was better this year. I think Sainz was absolutely incredible this year. Charles Leclerc just been a little bit behind him. It wasn't a big gap in the end. It was only 5.5 points, which over the course of 22 races is not a lot. I do feel like Leclerc was unlucky at times. Yeah, I mean, you could say about Monaco, you could say that, you know, it was his crash that ultimately did lead to his DNSs, did not start in that race, but he was just on fire. And Azerbaijan to get pole. I mean, again, I think Sainz was the one who crashed out in that that qualifying session to cause that, but he was still up there. And so he's an interesting one for sure. But I don't think nobody's going to say he's had a bad season by any stretch. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he's going to use it to fire himself up a bit more for next year. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on in, this year now as it is, as we're recording this. So yeah, Leclerc was the last one of our B category. Now we're on to the A's. Three guys in this. We're entering the top five of our grades overall. And we're going to start with Lando Norris, the guy that has beaten his teammates, all end up in McLaren this year. He was third in the Drivers' Championship for an extended period of this season as well. It did taper off towards the end. You don't know where you could say he was. I personally think he was unlucky. Some people are saying he made a mistake in Russia not to win that race. Obviously, the car did taper off towards the end of the season as well. But Tom Horrocks, it's still been an incredible season for Lando Norris. And he's emerged as we already knew he was talented, but he's emerged as a really, really top talent this year, I think.
Yeah. And I didn't personally give him an A. I gave him a B kind of plus, but just to see how close it was, I've been quite harsh. I've only given two drivers A's, no prize if it guesses who they were. And there was only 1 point in my gradings between Lando Norris and second place. So he was the only one, like he was the highest B grade you could possibly get. But yeah, no, he's come out, he set a stall out after stepping out, not something in the shadow of Carlos Sainz, because they were very evenly matched at McLaren. But, you know, with Ricardo, the the established race winner and the veteran coming into the team. Nobody expected him to step forward. I think in the same way that Ricciardo's start of the season is slightly masked by how well Lando did, I think equally it's slightly inflated how well he was doing because Ricciardo was underachieving as well. So it's a fantastic season for him. But I just look at his overall gradings and I see that, for me, he should have had potentially three pole positions and probably at least two wins if it weren't for small errors that he's made. You know, you look at his Imola lap and then, you know, track limits, and he would have had pole position. And then you look at Spa, the mistake in qualifying, which put him in the wall. We could have been talking about him getting second place or even potentially a win there because the race wouldn't have taken place. So we look there, and then you look at Russia, obviously, you know, rolling dice, very much falling to what the team are saying has cost him a win there. But he did get a pole position, but he's still without that first win. It's a huge step forward, and it is a coming of age for him. But the scary thing is he is still learning. He is still very young. And I think that, yes, McLaren at times had the third best car of the season, but Ferrari made a big step in that last third. And yes, it looked like he went missing, but you look, he picked up three punches in the last four races. That very much dropped him out of contention. He was potentially in that podium for Fernando Alonso. Without the virtual safety car and without Lando Norris's puncher, could potentially have been a podium for him there. And then McLaren are back in that fight, you know, fighting till the last race with Ferrari. So there's still some good performances in there. He had a lot of bad luck in the last part of the season. And I just think that McLaren just dropped off in pace just that little bit. And then with that, a tiny bit of motivation as well. But then to sneak ahead of Charles Leclerc in the standings in that last race, phenomenal. You know, I think Charles Leclerc's got some amazing talent, and but his year blighted by errors, and Lando Norris potentially could have been even further bar a few errors. But again, he's not the finished article. Is he the second or third youngest guy on the grid? Maybe he may even be the second youngest guy on the grid behind
22,
Tsunoda.
I think anyway. Yeah, he is very young.
If you look at it this way, he's the same age that Lewis Hamilton was when he came into Formula One. So you look at it that way and you think, you know, he could win the championship next year, given the right car. You know, with the experience he's got now and the maturity that he's shown, you know, you look at the way that he handled losing in Russia. And yeah, some people will say that that's when his season tailed off, but that's not really the case at all. He bounced straight back, showed good performance, but just had a lot of bad luck in the closing stages. So for me, yeah, phenomenal season. Third best driver of the year for me. But yeah, he just needs to make that final step next year. And if McLaren give him a car that can win races and he's able to hold off a rejuvenated Ricciardo in a car that he's had a hand in designing, then he's definitely going to reach that elite driver bracket and could potentially end Daniel Ricciardo's season. So it's absolutely solid performance from him, but I'm just looking forward to seeing what's coming because there's more.
There is a lot more to come from Lando Norris. He could easily have another 15 years or so in the sport comfortably at his age. So next year is going to be another big one for him as well. Quite a few podiums this year, almost his first win as well. It was a fantastic 2021 for him. And another guy that has had a fantastic year, I think myself and Owain were the only ones to give him an A+. I gave him an A+ just because he was stellar, especially in qualifying. It's, of course, Pierre Gasly. And Owain, you know, he may not have got another win this year, but he did everything other than that. The amount of times that he was best of the rest behind the Red Bulls and the Mercedes out front was just incredible. In what is a firm midfield car, he showed unbelievable pace in that AlphaTauri at times.
Yeah, I think if we look at the, just looking at the points, that's what I, you know, I'm going by. But you know, he's got 50 more points. Was it? No, wait, 110 to 110 to 30. He's got three quarters of the points for AlphaTauri that this year. I think that tells you everything you need to know about Pierre Gasly's season this year. He's absolutely knocked out of the park. You know, admittedly, you know, Yuki's a rookie, but you know, they field two cars, and Yuki's no, you know, as we've seen, particularly in Bahrain, he's no slouch. You know, the guy's not slow, and Helmut Marko wouldn't have kept him as long as he has if he didn't think he was all right. Pierre Gasly has just, you know, from sort of rockier parts of his career, has come back, and he's just come back to be such a complete driver. You know, picked up a podium in Azerbaijan. That probably, you know, Lewis Hamilton probably helped there in some ways. Obviously, with him going off, but there's just, you know, the fourth place is, you know, there's barely a time when he's finished outside you know, the top seven positions. You know, there's only three or four occasions of that, a couple of retirements, a couple of, you know, quite low down ones. But other than that, it's just, he's just managed to maintain it. And I, not to belabor the point, it's like he's still got 75% of the points. It kind of made Yuki look like a, like I say, it's probably contributed to the reason that I've said that rookie, that Yuki's in F1 a year too early, because Pierre Gasly's just, he looks like a sort of, he almost looks like a Barrichello, where you can just rely on him to pull out a decent result. And he's just going to be here doing that. You know, if he can maintain it, you know, this makes him sort of, it puts him back in the frame for if he wanted to move. And, you know, there are teams that would absolutely love to have him, because at times he's just got that sort of consistency and the actual ability that we thought he'd lost. And it seems he's sort of found his mojo over the year, you know, after sort of being, having his lunch handed to him by Verstappen. Yeah, he's not the driver I thought he was even 2 years ago, and that is saying something. Like, you know, he's really come back swinging, and I can't wait to see what he does next year.
I'm the same, mate. I mean, especially in qualifying as well. I can't remember what the stat is exactly. I was 22 races. I think he qualified in the top six something like 16 times. Not even the top 10, the top six. You know, four of that six is made up by the Red Bulls and the Mercedes. But you can't please everybody, can you, Tom Horrocks? Because you've got a very different opinion about Pierre Gasly. I think he's got pretty much A's across the board from everybody, except for you, who gave him a C overall.
I definitely did.
Can you explain that decision?
I would love to. Basically, for me, like, he seems to be a qualifying specialist. He just seems to go missing in races. And there was a lot of errors in there as well. And there was a lot of bad strategy from AlphaTauri. But, you know, the driver,
not his fault, is it?
The driver does have a say. And if he absolutely thinks that one stopping in a race is the wrong decision, then he should say that. And he just seems like he's setting that car up to qualify high and then drop down the field. And I think it's inflated a bit by how bad Tsunoda was. Tsunoda was the second worst driver on the grid, and then that car for me was at times the third quickest car on the grid, on average probably the fourth or fifth, but at least the fifth all season. So it's easier to grade him higher because his teammate was so poor, in the same way that for me Mick Schumacher's had a bit of a inflated grade because his teammate's been so poor. But you look at Daniel Ricciardo, terrible season, car very similar to AlphaTauri, probably slightly quicker overall. Ricciardo's beat him over the course of the season despite having a terrible season, and he was ahead of him all season as well. You know, people said about what a bad start Ricciardo had to the season, yet Ricciardo was ahead of Gasly for basically that entire period, because although Gasly was sticking it up there, he was falling back in races very quickly. So for me, yeah, I'll say it, I gave him a C overall. He was my eighth best driver of the season, so sorry, you can at me if you want, but yeah, no, I didn't rate him up there in the upper echelons. For me, he's not that elite driver that we're looking for at the top yet. He's a good driver, don't get me wrong, he's a solid driver and he can win races in the right car, but I wouldn't put him up there in the elite driver status at all.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, Tom, I'm going to at you.
Fair enough.
Pierre Gasly's... They don't give those points away for free, and Pierre Gasly's got more of them than Aston Martin, Williams, Alfa Romeo, and Haas combined. And bearing in mind, the Ferrari engine got a kick up the backside in the middle of the season. The Mercedes engine's one of the most powerful out there.
Yeah, but so did... Yeah, okay. But so did Ricciardo. And you said about how bad he was. What did you grade him, a D? He's got more points than all those teams as well.
He was in the McLaren, which... Was
slightly better, yeah, but he had a terrible season. So for me, you know,
McLaren was, let's be fair, the McLaren was more than slightly better.
It was significantly
better. Don't come at me with facts and logic. What I said was still technically correct.
The best kind of correct.
You get out of here with your damn reasoning.
It's my opinion. It's my opinion at the end of the day, and I've never been a Pierre Gasly fan, so potentially I'm being slightly biased in that. But that's my opinion, and I have based that on rewatching all the races to try and avoid recency bias, and that's what it's come up with. So that's based on my gradings, obviously. So that's you know, you can take from that what you will, but you know, everyone's got a different opinion, and as long as we're nice about it and we don't like be abusive towards each other, then I mean, that's fine. It's fine to have different opinions.
I mean, your opinion is wrong, but we'll gloss over it.
Everyone,
no. You beat me to that. I was going to say that, Tom Downey. Literally, I mean, we're not going to leave at the point, we're not going to debate about it too much, but no, for me, no. I don't agree with the dropping back in races thing because, you know, sixth in Monaco, third in Azerbaijan.
I don't think you can use Monaco as an example for dropping back.
No, but these are solid points. These are solid points at the end of the day. Fourth in the Netherlands, fourth in Mexico, fifth in Abu Dhabi, sixth in Saudi Arabia. And you can, I know, Cannavaro did not have a good season by any stretch, but he absolutely obliterated him. 80% of the points, nearly, like Owen was saying, 75% of the points, whatever it was for AlphaTauri. That's got to be the biggest margin of any team for probably a good while, for a good amount of seasons. I can't think of the last time when he was that one-sided in a team for the points. I'm sure someone in the comments will be able to tell me who that is, but I think it's been a very long time. Well, yeah, actually, ironically, it might be Pierre Gasly and Max Verstappen for their half season together at Red Bull. I think that's probably it. But anyway,
by the by.
So, yeah, again, let us know your opinions about Pierre Gasly. We've got some different takes on our four man panel today for that one. And now we'll get to the final A grade of our gradings here. It's Carlos Sainz, a guy that I think all four people on the season review gave the best driver of the season to, but he's ended up with an A, which is very good by all standards, of course. The only man to finish every race of the season. He almost scored points in every race of the season as well. 11th place twice in Portugal and in France. But other than that, he was in the points every single time. Tom Downey, it was a very, very good start to life for the smooth operator at Ferrari this year.
Yeah, I didn't expect Sainz to be as good as he was. I've always liked him. I've always rated him. I think because he's always been the sort of like, not so much plucky underdog, but he's always sort of flown a little bit under the radar. And being Welsh, we love an underdog story, right? You know, it's inherently in our nature. So when he came to Ferrari and everyone was, well, it started when he moved to McLaren, really. And then he started really building a name for himself, especially with his bromance with Lando, even if Netflix didn't quite get that. When he moved to Ferrari, I was quietly optimistic. I am a bit concerned that Ferrari may be using him to keep that seat warm. We'll see what happens with Schumacher. But I think it's more than fair to say that Sainz has done more than enough to justify his seat this year. And to also justify Ferrari keeping him on for, I would say, years to come. You know, I can't remember who came out on top in the qualifying battle between him and Leclerc, but he had a very Carlos Sainz season. And when I say that, I mean, if you look at the times he got a podium, there was always a story overshadowing him. So Abu Dhabi, obviously, the title fight, got a podium. Russia, he snuck onto the podium. But you know, look at what happened in that race. And he's just had a really, really, really solid season. I was a bit worried at the start because I think it was in Imola he went off and he made a couple of slight errors and stuff. And it almost seemed like he was trying to overdrive the car. But he sort of honed it in. He's got used to it, and he's really proven his worth. He's a better driver, I think, than people give him credit for. And now that he's in a team with as much heritage and history as Ferrari, I think people are looking at him and going, okay, that guy is actually pretty damn good. You know, because you don't just luck into a seat in Ferrari, regardless of where they are on the grid, you know, because obviously they're on a sort of bit of a rebuild mission at the moment. So he's earned that seat and he's had a damn good season. And if you ask me, he's earned the rights of that seat for years to come.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can see him. I know he's moved around a lot, obviously. I can see him being at Ferrari for quite some time. But at the end of the day, a bit like his hero Fernando Alonso, you put him in any car, the guy he's just quick. He's amazing. He's putting some incredible performances. I don't know why, but I mean, he's joked about it, I think, in interviews. Like, he always seems to get podiums and nobody seems to notice it. It's the most bizarre thing. He's always overshadowed by somebody. But at the end of the day, all of his performances this year, pretty much, he's always done the best he can in that car. Even when the car's not been that great, even when they struggle with tyres like they did at France, he still beat his teammate, he still beat Leclerc, and he beat Leclerc over the course of the season as well. So it's been an incredible, you know, start to life for him at Ferrari. And if Ferrari do have a title challenging car this year, which is very possible, you never know with the changing regulations, don't rule out Carlos Sainz. Don't rule him out. he could be in there for a championship. Who knows? But yeah, so down to the last two. Of course, it was the two title challenges, both getting the highest grade overall, getting an A+ overall. Sir Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen. We've covered this battle throughout the entire season. It's been incredible. It's been fantastic. It's been exactly what the sport's needed. It's produced one of the best seasons I can remember in Formula One history. It's been amazing to watch all the way through. And at the end of the day, they are the two standout performances. It's brilliant. And yeah, I can't even remember who's next. I've got to go into that ramble, but I'll go to Tom Horrocks. I mean, how good have Hamilton and Verstappen been this year? Because there has been times throughout this season where they've been half a minute, sometimes even a minute ahead of everybody else. They have just been in an absolute league of their own.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say about those two that hasn't already been said? I'm going to try and find something negative, and I'm sure I can. For me, I didn't give anyone an A+ because those two were going at it so hard this year. They both made more mistakes this year than they have done in the previous few years combined. The only blights for Hamilton, you know, Monaco, Baku, Belgium, finishing behind George Russell in qualifying was a bit of an embarrassment from there. Monaco obviously just going missing, and really that's kind of it. And I still think that the Silverstone issue was a racing incident. He got the penalty, fine, you know, but it was only a minor infringement for me with a big consequence. And then with Max Verstappen, yeah, he made a few early season errors, and the biggest blight on his season was his performance in Saudi Arabia. For me, that's I know on the season review I put Carlos Sainz as my best driver, but looking back at the whole season, I did just shade it Lewis ahead of Max just basically because of that Saudi Arabian Grand Prix performance. It was a really, really disappointing performance from Verstappen, and just showed a very, very ugly side of what potentially, you know, could come from him. But fortunately that didn't transpire, and he covered himself in glory in Abu Dhabi in the way he conducted himself. But it was just, you know, both drivers were relentlessly consistent, but just these tiny errors in a couple of races. You know, Imola we saw as well from Lewis, another a mistake there, which he was very lucky with. So it was just a phenomenal season, like you say, best one that I can remember ever. So I think it's certainly my lifetime, potentially ever. So yeah, I echo everything you've said about those two. Phenomenal performance all round from both of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we had Bottas win a race, we had Perez win a race, we had Ocon win a race, and Ricciardo win a race. Just those guys. I think other than that, Hamilton and Verstappen won every single race. They were absolutely in a league of their own. Yes, of course, they were in the two best cars. Let's not be around the bush when it comes to that. But just the level they were at, the fact that I think Verstappen, every single race that he finished, aside from Hungary, I think he was first and second in every single one of them. They were both incredible this year, Owen, weren't they? I mean, both of them, I think they egged each other on. I think they raised each other's game. Certainly Hamilton has said how he raised the bar this year that's just gone on to deal with Verstappen, and it was titanic. And he didn't know which way it was going to go until literally the last few laps of course of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see it's like before. You know, I think I've said previously that, you know, I've seen championship battles in the past get this ugly and get this sort of one way or the other and be on a knife edge going into the final race. But I didn't think I'd see it this soon. I'll be honest, I thought I'd have to wait years. I thought I'd be 30 before I saw something like this happen. You know, and I do agree. They gave away more wins than I've ever seen either of them give away, you know, when it wasn't over the course of the season. You know, Lewis will be kicking himself for Azerbaijan, absolutely kicking himself. You know, Max will be sort of thinking, you know, with Italy, you know, if I just waited, what could have been maybe in Italy instead? You know, both times they threw away points. You know, there's so many areas where they could have done so much, sort of, they both could have done better. And yet, you know, I'm nitpicking here to find holes in their performances, because what they did was so, you know, so ridiculously good. You look at Brazil and Lewis taking 25 places. And then I don't think anyone can shake a stick at the performance by Max in the Netherlands, because it just, there was nothing that Mercedes could, yeah, it was a downturn in Mercedes' performance, but it was just nothing that they could do. And they just walked away with it. You know, this is one for the ages. This is one of those ones that, you know, we'll be talking about that will sort of go down in history as one of those legendary seasons. You know, I, th- I, To try and say who was better out of these two, I don't think you can. I think it's just the way that the sort of cookie has crumbled on it. The best thing for me, though, is that at the end, you know, after, you know, you can be as annoyed as you want about the FIA and how they conducted those last few laps of Abu Dhabi, and I am, but the fact that both of them, but you know, both parties were in the in Parc Fermé, just, you know, clearly the greatest amount of respect. It didn't get as ugly as it could have been. You know, we had that with a small flash in Saudi Arabia, but beyond that, it didn't get as ugly as it could have been. That, you know, we've seen it get nasty before, and you never really felt that that was the case. Once the season was over, it was very sort of, we'll go back and do it next year. And I think that's something to be commended. And I think it says a lot about them that they both came to that final conclusion. You know, this is, they're neck and neck, basically. They're neck and neck as they went into the final race.
Yeah, it was literally neck and neck. They were level on points going into the final race, of course. It was just an incredible season from the bar. I know we keep saying it, but it's true. It was something else, and we should feel really privileged to have witnessed it throughout these last 9-10 months or whatever it was of the season. You know, it was something else. It really was. Of course, at times, both drivers made mistakes, but that's only because they were just pushing each other to the absolute limit and beyond at times, and that's what happened. And it was just incredible. You knew straight from the start of the season that it was going to be a big scrap between them, between Mercedes and Red Bull as well. And yeah, there were some unbelievable performances in there. I mean, the Verstappen winning three in a row between France, Austria and Styria, you know, he was untouchable during that run. Hamilton coming back from last on the grid and a 5-place grid penalty in Brazil, 25 overtakes, whatever he pulled off, just on another level. And Abu Dhabi was untouchable, of course, as well, until the very last stage of it, you know. And overall, you just have to commend them. You just have to commend what they've done. And yeah, it's been an incredible season to see them do this. I mean, Tom Downey, is there anything else you want to add to all that?
I don't think there's much that really needs to be added, to be honest. It's been, you know, I just want to echo what we've all already said. It has been the best season of Formula One I have ever watched. And yes, you know, there may be an element of bias in that because I'm a Max fan. But just to have such a championship battle that got a little bit ugly at times. I think we can all safely say the worst we saw was Saudi Arabia when things... That was when I was like, what on earth do we just witness? But to have the championship fight that we had all season, for the drivers to go in to the final race level on points, it is like something from... If it was written in a Hollywood film, you would go, oh, this would never happen in real life. The only thing that would make it even better, or sort of like even more Hollywood, is if they'd been level on race wins. You know, both drivers, excuse me, were not perfect this season by any stretch. You know, they both made errors. You know, we mentioned Hamilton in Baku with the brake magic. That was such an unlucky error, not something that we've ever seen sort of even remotely before. But it's such a sort of inconspicuous thing to do. Yeah, it was just been an incredible season. You know, drivers and teams going out at Hamilton Tong. Some team principals perhaps not covering themselves in glory. I'm looking at you, Toto. You know, no, Mikey, no. You know, but all in all, it's been just a scintillating season. You know, you should think back to Bahrain in that first race when it was like, okay, Red Bull are legitimately quick. And Max coulda, woulda, shoulda won that race. You know, if he would have done the overtake in a better place. And, you know, when he gave the position back, he didn't give it back in the best place. I wonder if that played into the thought process in Saudi Arabia, actually, because obviously when he gave Hamilton the position back, he gave it back on the back straight. But alas, just what a season. And I don't want to sound like one of those fans, but it was nice to see a different driver win. Now, again, I might be biased in saying that because I'm a Max fan, but Hamilton has won so much. It is nice to see a legitimate fight, because the last time Hamilton even remotely had any competition like this was 2016.
It's been a while. But I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I do think it's nice to see someone else win it, another team win it. Yeah, the team principals at both at times, Horner and Wolf, did not cover themselves in glory multiple times throughout all this. But that's just because everybody was just doing everything they could try and win to try and win. It was on another level. And if we have Mercedes and Red Bull again at the top when the regulations change, which is very possible, if not a few more teams thrown in there as well next year, it's gonna be incredible again. It's just so good to see. So good to see two drivers from different teams fighting it out for the Drivers' Championship. First time we had that in nearly 10 years. So it was great. It was amazing. And of course, they are our A-star performers, our A-plus performances for 2021. But yes, that is all the drivers. It's been a bumper podcast, this one, of course, because a lot of drivers to get through, a lot of opinions, a lot of whole seasons to get through, 22 races, 20 drivers. So yeah, it's been a ride for sure. But yes, we are also available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Verbal, Omni Studio, Pocket Cast, and the F1 Chronicle website. You can check through all of our 150 plus episodes on those, and as well as the F1 Chronicle website too, f1chronicle.com. So lads, I will give you a chance to plug your outlets now as well. Start with you, Tom Horrocks. You, of course, part of the Monkey Seat podcast. What is that and where can people find it?
So we're on a bit of a mid-season break at the moment, but we'll be back very soon with some similar controversial opinions, no doubt. We're on at Monkey Seat Pod on the socials, and monkeyseatpod.com is the website. You can catch us on all major podcasting platforms. Just search for the Monkey Seats. We're on YouTube as well. We do live stream most of our episodes on YouTube as well. You can come and catch me and Carl arguing about Formula One. And then occasionally people like Tom join us, and George, you've been on it as well before. So yeah, come and join us. Give us a listen.
Yep, definitely check those guys out. Of course, they do cover things outside of Formula One as well. Formula E, the Extreme E, the support series as well, like F2 and F3, and much more, I'm sure. So yeah, definitely check those guys out. And Tom Downey, of course, I've mentioned that you are part of Everything F1, where, of course, you have your own podcast as well.
Yes, so I am, as you mentioned, I'm part of Everything F1. You can find us across all socials. We are at JoinEF1. Also, we have a Facebook group, which is the Everything F1 Paddock. We have a YouTube channel, which is Everything F1. And also our podcast, which is the Everything F1 Podcast, which you can find on Spotify, Amazon, our websites, everythingf1.com. Much like Tom and some others, we have been on a bit of a post-season break, but we'll be back soon.
Yeah, definitely do check those guys out. Great show. Another one I've been on as well. Always good to get those guys' opinions on things. They did a bumper 2021 review as well for the season, which was a lot of fun listening to that in the gym. Away Medford, although you finished your course, you're not technically graduated yet. Like you said, you've not been to the ceremony, but you are an expert, a master, if you will, of memes to do with F1.
Hey, I'm employed. Not employed. I'm on PhD now. It's all good. Still a student. Yeah,
Dr. Medford, incoming.
Yeah. I actually just had to supersede Jack. That's all I actually wanted.
No. Well, you'll be the beyond the master of engineering.
You'll be above that.
It doesn't sound as good though, does it?
No. If you'd like to read the sort of level of stuff that I'll be submitting to said PhD, make sure you take a look at the meme reviews. I've done one for almost every single race this season, apart from the ones that are just sort of a bit unsociably timed because I still have to work. So you know, we're talking like 17 meme reviews, and now they're getting to the point where some of my friends, the only way they experience Formula One is by reading that. There's also, if you want to get the start of my thoughts on the cars at the start of the season, there's also a couple more articles on there as well. We don't know what we're going to do for the next year's cars, but we'll work something out. But if you want to have a look at those and any more things I've written, just make sure you look for me on sportlightpro.com.
That's the one. Yeah, definitely check those out. Hopefully we'll get some car reviews and stuff on Spotlight Pro, but we'll see what's going on. We don't even have dates. I don't think we have dates.
There's no point comparing them. Like, it's just like, yeah, this one's got ground effect and this one doesn't, because it legally couldn't.
That's true. The cars will be incomparable to the 2021 ones on this year. Very big change in regulations, which should spice up the action, no way, and make it a lot more entertaining for the fans, and of course more overtakes, but let's just see how that all works out. But yeah, we will be back in 2 weeks' time to take another retrospective look at the 2021 season. I think this time we'll probably look at the best performances. We've given some shout-outs to some ones like Hamilton in Brazil and stuff like that. So yeah, we'll take a look at them. I think Hamilton and Verstappen will probably dominate that list, but yeah, we'll let you know all about that when it's out. That'll be out in 2 weeks' time, all being well. So yes, thank you very much for joining us, lads. Really do appreciate it, as always.
Pleasure as always.
Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Until then, see you for the next one. Goodbye.